The following program is a production of KHNS. Its content does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the Board of Directors and staff of Lincoln-L Broadcasting Incorporated, the licensee.
Talk Around Town is supported in part by Community Waste Solutions, offering comprehensive refuse services for the community of Haines, with curbside pickup to South Hall, composting to recycling, C&D disposal to septic and porta potty services. Community Waste Solutions at the end of FAA Road in Haines, open 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Monday through Saturday.
Welcome to Talk Around Town. I'm Deborah Schnabel, your guide through today's talk about things that matter. Stay tuned for our current news analysis with Tom Morfitt. Our talking topic today, what is it worth? How community decisions reflect our values. Our guests are Danny Gaunce and Robert Venables. We'll check in with Children's Reading Foundation and Hey, Who Are You? Introduces us to another community member. Please stay tuned. Good day to you, Tom Morfitt.
Good morning, Deborah.
How are you today?
Good.
I want to thank you for coming. You put out a newspaper on Wednesday nights or early Thursday morning, and come on in and tell us what you think about what's happening in the Upper Lincoln.
Yeah, and sometimes it's a little tough to put things in perspective.
I'm sure it is.
It's like, wow, all this stuff just happened. It was, we just got term paper done. What did we say in it?
Oh, that's a familiar feeling. Yeah. Okay, so what has been happening since we talked with you last?
Well, I'm going to use the goodwill that you've provided me and do a quick plug right off for folks to be greeters at the ferry terminal. The town tourism department is looking for folks to greet automobiles as they get off the ferries. This is what we used to do. This is Back to the Future, and give them a packet of information about our town. Back before we had cruise ships, we did this for all the big ships that came in from Bellingham and from Prince Rupert. And we're back to this. And it's not a bad way to go, but you need people to help give out the packets and say, geez, stay in our town a while.
So if somebody wants to do that, what do they do?
Get a hold of Tanya Carlson at the Visitor Center, 2234.
Okay, great. Could you turn your chair around
and
readjust yourself here? There we go. Okay. I like looking at the person I'm talking to.
Yes, and so does your audience.
The listeners. Okay, we've got Tom focused now.
Okay.
And so, tell us.
Big week of news.
Great.
The biggest single story in our regard was the Connolly Lake decision by Alaska Power and Telephone to discontinue their efforts to develop that project, to surrender the permit. They now have their preliminary permit. Took everyone quite by surprise.
I think so, and we are going to talk about that later in the program with Danny Gaunce.
Yeah. Connolly Lake.
I invite you to stay around and yap about that.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear, actually, because we still have a lot of questions that are unanswered. Mm-hmm. It was going to be a pretty big project for the utility. It was kind of two steps up in terms of what we needed, but according to utility, it was the best alternative for our next step up. But because it was such a big project, quite a bit of financial assistance was needed, or the utility needed quite a bit of financial assistance. The assistance, because it doesn't have the customer load right now to justify that size of the construction project, and that financial assistance was dependent partly on local support. So it was kind of a chicken and egg equation. The company needed public support. There were a lot of questions about potential impacts mm-hmm. on fisheries up there above Chilkoot Lake. Of course, it's one of the basically the heart, well, half the heart of our commercial fishing industry is that lake. So an enormously complicated process and question that I think we all expected to be working on here for the next 2 years off the table. We're still curious why this has happened at this time, what factors went into the company's decision, you know, which factors were big in the company's decision, which were small. Hopefully those answers to those questions will be forthcoming. But I don't think anybody expected at this mm-hmm. time. And the company had been working on it for 3 years. There were certainly some regulatory hurdles concerning the Eagle Preserve. They would have to, you know, the company's plans were pretty hardwired to having the power plant in the Eagle Preserve, which would have necessitated special action by the state of Alaska. But, you know, we're in the United States of America. We can figure things out, right? Well, at one time,
well,
we could.
When they're the engineering aspects of things, yes, but I think that what we have a real hard time figuring out is exactly, you know, the values in the community mm-hmm. and where do we really, when we have to pinpoint them and say, this is where we stand, mm-hmm. we are so bad at that.
Yeah, and in our defense, these things go through kind of this labyrinth regulatory process. So mm-hmm. the whole discussion happens, you know, with FERC, you know, this mm-hmm. this agency, Federal Energy Regulatory mm-hmm. Commission, their process, their criteria, the state of Alaska's, you know, it's not as though we're just you and I sitting down saying, hey, how can we make this work?
Mm-hmm.
There's the process really happens somewhat apart from this community. Separate.
Right.
Maybe
we do plug into that, though.
Oh, yeah, yeah, we definitely plug into
that. The Haynesboro Assembly was debated and had a public meeting on the, you know, what would be our position that we would give to FERC relative to our attitude about whether they should have one process over another, you know, traditional, mm-hmm. remember that, the traditional
or
approach.
Or the integrated
approach mm-hmm. and to their studies. So, and then somebody else, like I say, FERC has to weigh that and mm-hmm. filter through that. It's incredibly complex fabric.
And I would like to make a plug here. It seems like on a lot of these big projects, we get thrown into this very complex regulatory equation mm-hmm. to make the project happen. And recently there was discussion at the assembly level about these good neighbor agreements and perhaps a model for having the discussions outside of the regulatory network and just saying, we mm-hmm. would like to do this mm-hmm. before we file for any permits mm-hmm. or so on and so forth. Let's have a discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think if you look back, and the context of those meetings was, geez, we do this on development projects all the time. Somebody wants to do something, they have to file for this complicated permit. Getting the permit requires all these weird criteria. And then we get in the battlefield of the criteria. Mm-hmm, can mm-hmm, we just sit mm-hmm, down and have a discussion? Mm-hmm. I think, from my perspective as a reporter, that that would be welcome. That other, and I know Constantine Mineral Resources, to their credit, who's looking to develop a mine up there above the Kahini River at 40 Mile, has already had some informal meetings with. Mm-hmm. with the folks at Lynn Canal Conservation in this vein.
Mm-hmm.
Can we just start and have a discussion mm-hmm. before we get there? So anyway, big story.
Recognizing the stakeholders.
Yeah.
Got to identify the stakeholders, bring them in early on the game.
Right, because otherwise the process is kind of mm-hmm. forced on us mm-hmm. versus us taking initiative and saying, what are we really talking? Anyway, big news. Big weekend news this week. The burglary spree Monday. 28 cars.
Burglary spree.
Mm-hmm. 28 cars rifled downtown. All kinds of things missing. The police.
Small things, right? Mostly.
Yeah. Things that would be in your car.
Oh, right.
Things that fit into your car, mostly.
Yeah. Okay.
No sofas or big screen TVs. Car stereos. Mm-hmm. Cameras. I guess we found out what people leave in their cars.
Yeah, cool.
Quite a bit of, a few dozen items that were stolen. Mm-hmm. were recovered yesterday.
Okay, so where are we on
Main Street? No arrests at press time last night.
Okay.
But we expect, I believe there are suspects at this point.
Okay.
There's been a car, a bunch of it's been retrieved. I would imagine there would be suspects. Will be interesting to see how our police do on this case.
Yeah.
Without the an acting, well, without a formal chief.
We do have an interim chief.
Yeah, we have an interim chief.
And a darn good, seems like a darn good team of guys there, guys and gals, and which may I do the segue into the next story, which is one of our police officers did very well in the race.
Oh yes. Whole new generation of racers in the Kluane to Chilkat bike race. 30 somethings have kind of stepped up, and our own Jen Walsh of Haines, first solo woman in the solo women's division, she won. Novice racer, just got her first racing bike a few months ago. And then Brandy Stickler.
Third.
Age 31.
Which in itself is an incredible.
Yeah, third in solo thing, women's as well. Yeah. So a real proud day for Haines in that regard. And then, other folks, Jason Rettinger, who's been a policeman here, grew up here, said, geez, for the first time, you know, he said he'd been seeing this race go on, you know, most of his life. Threw in, did really well on a four person. Now is talking about maybe being on a smaller team. The rise of this, of the smaller teams and these people, and I think it's called endurance sports, is something that's real. There's more people sitting on bikes for hours at a time.
Hours, like 9 hours.
Right.
You know, between 6 and 9 hours. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, and the fascinating thing to me was that you can really train for this in your kitchen. Jen Walsh, that's where her bike was. The winner I talked to of the whole event, a 33-year-old policeman again from Vancouver, I said, how much do you train? He said, about 2 hours a day.
Ooh.
On my bike.
Ooh.
He said he had a 3-month-old and he had two very young children. He goes, about 4 a.m, I'm on my bike in the living room. He has two young kids and that's when he can train. So, you know, you don't need
to. You are dedicated. You are committed.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And it's interesting. Jen also used you can go online and find your workout that says, pedal this far because you have an odometer on your stationary bike. Pedal this far this day.
Oh, okay.
And it's there. You just have to commit.
Well, you know. My congratulations to all of them, everybody in town. And I know, I think Darcy Colbeck headed up a team with
fifth graders. Yeah,
fifth graders
did very well.
Right.
So it's interesting that the race is getting so much more competitive. It's almost as though there's no middle class in the race. There's the fast guys, and then the people like our team.
Well, your team. Yeah, who did get the Red Lantern Award, Mr. Morfitt?
No comment.
And I think you guys, didn't you win a record and make a record for the slowest ever or almost?
No, because of the tailwind.
Oh, okay.
It's questionable whether we would have finished. I don't think we would have finished within the prescribed 12-hour the finish line, and this has happened to us in other events, finish line closes actually before we get there. But thanks.
Thank you very much, Tom. Yeah. I'm sorry we've used up the time for checking in. But if you'd like to stay around, we'd be happy to have you with Danny Gaunce and Robert Venables later in the program.
Yeah, I'll be listening.
Aren't Lake Wobegon, where all the children are above average. So parents need a little bit of help in the Upper Lynn Canal. And today we're checking in with the children's reading group oh, sorry, that's not the right name, Foundation, the Children's Reading Foundation, one of several local sponsors of the program called Brain Rules for Babies. Jeannie Kithyama will tell us what the Brain Rules for Babies is all about. Welcome, Jeannie.
Hi, Deborah.
Hi.
Thanks for having us.
You bet, and I'd like you to introduce our expert guest today.
Yes, Heather is working with Dr. John Medina down in Seattle. He is a molecular biologist, mm-hmm. and she works with his kids and works with him. She has a great partnership with him that she's going to explain.
Okay. Welcome, yeah. Heather.
Thank you.
So John Medina mm-hmm. is has has published a book, which is, I see so many people carrying it around. It looks like a Bible. It's a Bible for parents. It's called Brain Rules for Babies.
Yes.
What are Brain Rules for Babies?
Yes. Well, the title of the book is Brain Rules for Baby, How to Raise a Smart and Happy Child from 0 to 5. So mm-hmm. the title is a little bit deceptive. It's applicable to babies as well as young children. So,
okay.
We are actually having a series of meetings mm-hmm. this coming couple of weeks. Tonight is the first one, but I hope that if people are not able to make it tonight, that does not prevent them from coming next week.
I was mm-hmm. going to ask about mm-hmm. that. So it is a program that starts tonight, but then doesn't mm-hmm. meet again until Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday
right.
next week, and then there's a break.
Mm-hmm.
And is that so that you can go home and practice on your baby or whatever?
Exactly.
Is it?
Yep. My hope really for this project is that people can learn some strategies that they can try out at home. We can discuss them together and hopefully find some things that will help improve people's relationships with their kids, get some positive results, and share kind of experiences together.
Okay. So mm-hmm. how is this different from other kind of parenting how-to-do mm-hmm. sessions where, you know, it's more behavioral, I
yes.
suppose? So
yeah, that's a great question. The great thing about this book is that it is based on science. And John, he likes to call himself a grumpy scientist because he's very particular about the science that he uses in this mm-hmm, book. Mm-hmm. It has to have been studies that have been repeated by multiple scientists, mm-hmm. Published in peer-reviewed journals. Mm-hmm. And so the information here is good. Mm-hmm. It's been tested and retested. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the information in the book, for example, we're going to be talking about empathy and emotion coaching. School performance enhancement. How do we get the most out of our mm-hmm. children's...
Mm-hmm. There's a couple mm-hmm. there that I wanted to ask about specifically. Mm-hmm. One is, can you give me an... developing boundaries. My goodness, how do you take a baby who you can't even talk to and teach how to develop boundaries?
Right.
I didn't even know what boundaries meant until about, I went to therapy about 4 years ago.
Yeah.
It's a tough one to learn.
Yeah.
And it's a very modern... I mean, is it a modern concept or not? I don't know.
Well, I mean, I think that's a great question. I think that a lot of information here about developing boundaries, about helping children to develop values mm-hmm. and understand the limits of acceptable behavior and social behavior, what's socially acceptable, they can learn these things even by the time they get into the terrible twos, we need to start helping them learn what those boundaries are.
So mm-hmm. do you teach them by telling them? I mean, is that a mm-hmm. telling? Is the education with words or
yes.
is it with watch me? You know, how mm-hmm. do you watch me make a boundary? We're not talking about building a physical fence.
Yeah, all of the above. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of this is done through modeling. Through a lot of verbalization, you know, we need to talk to our kids about how we feel about things, what our responses are. They need to understand, first of all, that they're going to have emotions that they need to learn how to label and that it's okay. It's okay to feel angry. It's okay to feel frustrated. It's okay to feel sad. But that there are socially acceptable ways to process those emotions. Mm-hmm. Emotions are not a choice. Behavior is a choice. So a huge part of our goal as parents and our job as parents is to help kids learn how they can process these emotions that are kind of beyond their ability to control mm-hmm. In ways that are healthy, mm-hmm. that are socially acceptable, and that ultimately will help them to feel okay about how how they emotionally respond to the world.
Okay, and this is different from I'm okay, you're okay, which was like in
absolutely.
The 60s, because mm-hmm. when I'm okay, you're okay, that wasn't really talking about boundaries. It was just talking about accepting whatever behavior you had.
Yep,
I don't
absolutely.
Think I read that book, actually.
Absolutely.
Jeannie, you have, it looked like you had something you wanted to contribute.
Just along that line, mm-hmm. he has this great quote in here from a novelist, James Baldwin, that says, children have never been good at listening to their parents, but they've never failed to imitate them.
Oh,
and that's
yeah.
about building these relationships and things that you don't think about. Like, it's natural that parents are stressed and they might have an mm-hmm. argument or fight in front of their child, but it's important that the child sees the reconciliation, too, so that mm-hmm. they can learn from it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. One of the things that I was also intrigued by in the poster yeah. was nurturing your marriage mm-hmm. as parents. So, I mean, this is so holistic, obviously, mm-hmm. raising children. I wonder how many people, well, as human beings, mm-hmm. we do compartmentalize our lives so often. I mean, it's the natural thing to do to just keep it under control.
Mm-hmm.
And this whole thing of brain rules for babies, it sounds like mm-hmm. it's really an approach to life holistically as a person, as an adult, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And I'm sure that in your classes and in your teaching, both of you, I'm sure there's a lot of training. It's more like training the parents than it is training the child, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
So how would somebody participate in this? Do they have to contact you? Do they just show up? Is there a cost?
Great question. Nope, this is free. Child care is actually provided by Lynn Canal Counseling Services.
Oh, so you don't get to bring your children and practice on them in the class?
I think that most parents would probably find that difficult to pay attention mm-hmm. while they have their children mm-hmm. with them. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's a great question. So there will be childcare provided. The meetings start at 6:30. They're from 6:30 to 8 at the Haynes Library. And again, they start tonight. Tonight, I heard tell that there will be a little bit of food provided.
Mm-hmm.
But then they continue next week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, also at 6:30 to 8.
Great.
And then the following Monday.
Great. And I guess just in closing, too, I would just like to thank the sponsors. Yeah. I suppose they're called sponsors, collaborators. Bringing together the public library, Lynn Canal Counseling Service, parents as teachers, the REACH program, Haynes ANS Camp 5, Tlingit Haida Community Council, Head Start. Wow, the Chilkat Valley Preschool, the CrossFit Foundation, the Chilkat Indian Association, and your group, too. Jeannie, would you say that name again,
Children's Reading Foundation
Children's Reading Foundation of
Haynes. And can I say one more thing?
Absolutely.
Well, as we were talking a little bit earlier, is that John Medina, he is this great scientist, and like he gets really excited about science mm-hmm. things, and he learned that that's kind of like an ivory tower. And so he found that talking to parents is what they really want is the ivory soap. They want to know the practical side
sure.
of it. And Heather is kind of the interpreter in that way. So the science background for me gives us that rationale of why these things happen or why these things work. But then he writes and with humor and encouragement. And that's what gets me excited about that whole potential with the young ones, because it's so doable for parents. Mm-hmm. And if you look at those charts of brain development, it's at a steep incline between 0 to 4. So that's like the prime time. So if parents just knew all these little things, it would help the kids so much in there.
Great. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I know there's a lot of parents in Haynes. I see lots of little children.
Mm-hmm.
And so it would be great to see you at the library tonight at 6:30.
6:30.
All right.
Yes.
Thanks, Deborah, coming and letting us hear about that. And good luck.
Thank you. Thanks
to
so
everybody.
Much for having me.
You bet. you're listening to Talk Around Town on your community radio station, KHNS. Talking topic. A community reflects its values. To illustrate that, like a littered town is evidence that a clean and ordered environment is not a priority. A well-funded library is evidence that citizens value learning. A provisioned boat harbor indicates support for the fishing industry. Burying utility lines reflects an aesthetic. What does withholding support for setting a hydroelectric dam indicate? We're going to explore that today. Issues debated by decision makers are planning issues, and we have invited two Haines planning commissioners to discuss the trade-offs in decisions that we make as a community, mostly questions about energy. Robert Venables, the former Haynesborough manager, a planning commissioner, and the energy coordinator for Southeast Conference, is with us today. Welcome, Robert.
Good morning.
And Danny Gauntz, the manager of power operations, Alaska Power and Telephone in Haines, also a planning commissioner here in Haines. Welcome, Danny.
Good morning.
Yeah, and we have invited also today, as you already know, to stay in on the program, the pensive, thoughtful, questioning editor of the Choquette Valley News, Tom Morfitt. Thanks for staying on, Tom. Okay, two issues have risen in the past weeks. One of them is the Haynesborough Assembly convened in a special meeting. I think it might have even been called an emergency meeting, I'm not sure, to discuss dismantling and burying utility lines at the new intersection of Beach Road and Old Haynes Highway. And then the second issue, AP&T has apparently, well, has pulled the plug on further studies for hydropower generation by damming Connolly Lake. I looked for justification for burying utility lines, and I also looked for a defense for Connolly Lake hydropower in the Haynesborough Comprehensive Plan, and I was so surprised to find that the Comprehensive Plan doesn't support either one of those issues. And so I would like to start by asking either Danny or Robert, who wants to jump in first, do you recall any debate over including, like, support for the Connolly Dam hydroelectric power in the Comprehensive Plan? Do you have an explanation for why it wasn't there?
Actually, it is there.
Not in an action plan.
Well, what's in the action plan is saying that the government needs to do its part in removing barriers to understanding and the feasibility of the project. As planners and policymakers, we shouldn't be out in front of an issue saying, oh, this is a predetermined outcome we want to make Connolly make regardless of the feasibility economically. And so if you took a look at, I think it's probably toward the bottom of the action items, it talks about, you know, removing barriers and obstacles to make sure that those type of projects could move forward. And it's up to the project proponent, AP&T in this case, to prove that not only is it technically feasible, but it's also economically feasible.
So I turn to you, Danny, because I can imagine, I guess at this point in time, you know, I didn't really think about any, some might call it a conflict of interest, but maybe it was a conflict within you just trying to balance your commissioner hat and your APT hat when it comes to energy issues and the planning for the future in Haines. Do you pretty much agree with Robert that you're not supposed to be out front advocating?
I believe what he says is correct. There was quite a bit of discussion, and actually there was quite a bit of discussion not only at the planning level, but at also even the Energy Sustainability Commission level, that was all nearly the same time, maybe just slightly before that, and even the assembly level, of whether or not we wanted to specifically name Connolly. And it seemed like several times that there was resistance to that, that because we were getting into the studying of the other alternative, which was the Shuby option, the Shuby Lake option, mm-hmm. at that point. So that was kind of all just a timing issue, mm-hmm. with whether or not Connolly was actually named, mm-hmm. in that. But there was, you know, specific motions and resolutions that were moved around in support of hydro specifically.
Right, it's general that way. Tom, you raised the issue earlier in a different segment of the show here, and stated that we had, you anyway, and maybe a large part of the community, really expected to have the Connolly Lake debate go on, you know, stay on the table for a couple of years, and we were going to be working with it and on and on. And it's a surprise, I suppose, to see it pulled from the table. So do you have any direct questions for Danny about that? I'm sorry, don't want to put you on the spot, but
yeah, I think the unknown
at this point is when we spoke, and both KHNS and the Chukka Valley News this week report that this project isn't being scratched. The FERC permit is being relinquished, and so maybe I was hoping, and this is kind of apart from your planning question, Danny might be able to provide a little bit of insight into Is it the end?
Yeah, or
absolutely not.
Oh, well, let's react to that. How? All right, so turning in the FERC permit, so I guess separate all that out for us then.
The FERC permit actually gives us the permission, the direction of where we're going to go with the planning and design of the project. That doesn't mean that that stuff stops. All it means is the regimented schedule of the forward progress of that is given up. So with a FERC permit, it's good for 3 years, and there are required
milestones.
Milestones and deadlines that are required quarterly, that are required to be met with progress reports and so on and so forth. And if we're not meeting those specific milestones, then it doesn't fit their schedule, and so then we get in bad graces, I guess.
And it's an I'll just fill in the blank here. It's an administrative nightmare. You spend all your time trying to fill out paperwork and reports.
This is correct.
So you're kind of saving yourself
administrative
work, but the research is still going to go forward?
Well, a lot of the research that we had originally started when we started the preliminary permit, a lot of that has been, the field work especially, has been done. There's still a bunch of the reports that need to be completed and, compiled into, become further parts of that permit. But I think a lot of where we are right now is a lot of those studies are expensive. And, when we originally filed for the renewable energy grant from the state of Alaska through AEA, they only gave us a very small portion of the amount of funds that we had requested. So we were behind the eight ball already. And then in this last round of grants that we expect to be awarded probably very soon when the governor signs that, we're not included. So we're even farther behind the eight ball as far as funding for a lot of those studies that we had hoped to do. And so that original preliminary permit with FERC is totally separate of the way that we've been getting our funds from the state. And so we have a big gap in funding versus where we were going to be with the federal government. So that's where we're rubbing between the two.
I see. Okay.
And
but it doesn't I want to check. Hold on to that, Robert. By giving up the FERC permit, does that not then also open the door for anybody else who wants to study this project to study? Whereas before, you were you had it exclusively.
Correct.
Okay.
So,
Robert.
much of what I perceive AP&T doing has been in response to local concerns that have been raised throughout the community about the what-ifs scenarios out at Chilkoot. And, as those pertain to FERC licensing, they were getting ahead of perhaps the very basic mandate that they had through the AEA grant of what is the basic economic feasibility of this project. And my hope is that we're going to see that information come out. And an analogy I've used akin to baseball is, the feasibility study is getting to first base, finding out, the technical issues, can it be built? They had four different options that they were taking a look at. And then economic feasibility at more of a macro level. But, it really doesn't make a lot of sense to pursue a project if your rates are going to go up. So you don't want to have an economically viable project that will help to, stabilize and hopefully lower the electrical rate in the Upper Lynn Canal. So you know, and then doing the FERC licensing is kind of the second and third base, you know, issues that are further down the road.
Mm-hmm. Robert, now, as the energy coordinator for Southeast Conference, I'm assuming that you're familiar with, like, all of the various, don't laugh, just say yes.
Yeah, everything.
Familiar with, well, at least with what's in the docket. What are people working on?
Right.
What are they thinking about? Is Conley Lake, like, more problematic than most, than other projects generally in Southeast Alaska, or do all of them go through these really kind of difficult, and I call them value setting struggles, you know, that, and that's kind of what I'm seeing them that way.
Well, I think each project has its own unique set of issues and challenges. They seem to pale the more desperate a community is. So perhaps the more affluent, complacent communities would have the time to meddle in a micro, you know, level that, oh, well, I'm not sure if that fits into my worldview.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
Sitka's not having this problem right now. They just spent millions.
And what is the name of that project, just so we...
That's the Blue Lake.
They're
raising the dam 83 feet at a cost of upwards of $150 million.
And is this in a fishing area?
Hey, this is Southeast Alaska.
Southeast Alaska. show me a stream that's not a fishing area. I know, I understand. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, so let's go back then to... And I really appreciate learning this, the fact that you're still going to be pursuing it, but maybe on a different time schedule. And one of the things I think needs to be brought up too is that Conley Lake was identified decades ago, I think.
Correct.
By the predecessor to AP&T as a power source. So it's not like it's like a new thing. It's been studied for a very long time. But I'm curious about AP&T's kind of commitment, I suppose, to solving what's perceived, perhaps, or identified as a power need. Right now, as I understand it, and I got all my information from the comprehensive plan, AP&T produces right now all sources about 8 megawatts of power, and that's for both that powers both Haynes and Skagway. Mm-hmm. And that our and IPEC also produces power, but I found out they buy a lot of it from you.
Correct.
Okay. So the peak demand in Haynes is about 2.7 megawatts. Peak demand for both Skagway and Haynes currently is about 5 megawatts. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
And so in the winter, our generating capacity is about 4 megawatts. So we are at cannot at this time rely 100% on hydroelectric power.
That is correct.
Okay, and we do demonstrate that from time to time in the community. So the community, I think, does want alternatives to diesel power generation.
Mm-hmm.
But the commitment to hydropower, how many options do we have? Conley Lake was one. Shuby Lake has been identified but decided by AP&T not economical to pursue. And then the other ones, like Walker Lake, that's 0.4 megawatts. I mean, it's helpful, but it's not impactful.
Is it 0.4 or 1?
It's close to 1 megawatt.
It is? Okay, well, I got this out of...
Depends on design, which hasn't occurred yet.
Okay. And then, of course, I should say we have West Creek.
Mm-hmm.
Which is 25 megawatts, but I don't have any idea where anyone is in terms of developing that. So as planning commissioners, and you know, if you have two hats, planning commissioner for Haynes, but you also have planning for APT. I mean, I just want to come out and say it. A lot of people just say, well, AP&T is just out to make money. They just want to build a dam. Do you just want to make money, or do you want to create power in response to a real need that you see the community has?
We definitely have a need. There's little question of that in my mind, you know, and especially long term. You know, when Goat Lake was built, there were some that felt that it raised, you know, some rates or, you know, power rates at that time, especially in Skagway, for those folks. But the reality is, had we not done that project, we'd be burning diesel now, and our rates would have been much higher. So building a new hydro is a much bigger project time-wise than a lot of folks think. And so we have to plan, you know, what's power going to be like in 50 years? And so that's the kind of project that Conley is.
50 years?
Make it 100 years.
Well, I want to talk about power needs. I mean, unless Haynes totally shrivels up and dies, you know, which some might think is happening.
Never.
But let's say that we do not grow and Skagway does grow, which I think that the ore terminal projects and various, you know, they more is coming in. The demand for energy is obviously increasing in Skagway. Not so much in Haynes. How long can we live with what we've got with what you just see on the horizon? I'd like you to only look 10 years ahead, not 50. Tell me what you see in 10 years.
Well, it looks like something's going to happen with Walker Lake. That's the way it appears now. So if we add, you know, the Walker Lake project to our mix, you know, we'll still be, you know, in 5 to 8 years or something if it comes online. We would be back at nearly where we are now is kind of the way I'm seeing it, just kind of rule of thumb.
Mm-hmm.
With the output there, we'll be back to, you know, some minimal diesel generation.
Now, that's not an AP&T project, though, is it?
That's correct.
Walker Lake.
Right, correct.
So it'd be created, built by somebody else, owned by somebody else, and you would buy the power and sell it to us?
Likely so.
Okay.
So with that in mind, you know, what happens, you know, 10 years from now, you know, when we're back in the same boat we're in right at this moment, we got to have additional. And I think that, you know, long term, there is no question we still have to make, you know, we still have to move forward with a project of some kind. There's no question of that.
So what are our options?
Very few. As far as wintertime hydro, and we looked at Shuby Lake, you know, and it's very similar to Conley, but it would cost more money and generate less than
Conley. What do you mean it's similar to Conley?
Just in attributes,
high mountain,
lake, okay. Lake fed. We know that we got to have more lake fed hydro. We got to have firm year round hydro. And so the options are pretty slim.
And right now we don't have any lake hydro. It's all run of the river, right?
Goat Lake is a lake project.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Yep. So, and that's why we have the output from it for 4 megawatts year round. Mm-hmm. We have that now.
Mm-hmm. But it just runs out of water sometimes.
Correct. Yep. The lake is only so big.
Right.
You know what was interesting at the Rural Energy Conference, and I'm committed to displacing diesel everywhere, all the time.
Okay.
But one of the plenary sessions was entitled "Diesel is Your Friend."
Tell me how that goes.
Well, the one way to really raise your rates dramatically is to build a hydro or any other alternative energy project before it's time, because you have to pay the debt, you have to pay the operations and maintenance, and that goes into the rate base. So, you know, as expensive as diesel is, if you're only going to need a small increment of supplemental power, often an efficient diesel or, you know, cogeneration generator would be least expensive than building something premature, which is why you saw, like, Juno with their Lake Dorothy, a very, very expensive project, but they had it pretty much fully subscribed when they were able to bring it on, so it only raised the rates 2 cents, you know, a kilowatt hour, as opposed to a lot more than that if they didn't have their interruptible customers and loads that they needed to make that thing pencil out.
But it doesn't sound like that's the problem in the Upper Lynn Canal of bringing hydro on too early.
Well, it would be if you design Conley incorrectly, which is, I think, what we're waiting for. The jury's still out on what this feasibility is, so there's really not a lot that we can intelligently speak about regarding Conley and mm-hmm. how it fits in, because you know, there's a lot of scenarios where we need how many weeks did we burn diesel this past year?
Just right out of month.
You know, so
4 or 5 weeks.
In a wet year, you might not burn any at all.
The previous year, we didn't burn any.
So, no. You know, we could go for the next 5 years and not burn any diesel and be adequate. Or we could have a series of dry years and burn 3 or 4 weeks at a time. Well, if you're carrying another $30 million in debt to meet a month's worth of generation, that's not going to pencil out.
It's like buying a semi-truck to do the errands around town.
Wow. That could be fun. Do you have a question, Tom?
Yes, I have two. Danny, just to get back to, I guess, make absolutely clear kind of what happened here with FERC, to move ahead in the FERC process, it seems like APT needed a certain amount of money, and maybe to get that money from the state, you needed a certain amount of support. I guess our question was, why was that public support? It seemed like the utility was going to the borough, needed support here in the last couple of months. Was that generally the equation? Is my first question.
Well, I don't think that the giving up of the permit and that part of it is directly because of the lack of support right now. It's one of the issues. Yes,
okay.
But the funding itself, but probably most importantly is the current sales that we have do not justify buying the semi truck.
Gotcha. Because Connolly is such a big project,
right,
versus
Walker Lake. If we had some certainty in some paperwork, conversations with the cruise ships or a mine, if we had something stable from a commitment of some kind, mm-hmm, then there would be no question.
So, Danny, is this kind of a statement about the faith, APT's faith in the future growth in the Lynn Canal, Haines and Skagway?
I don't know if it's APT's faith. I know the state of Alaska did a comprehensive resource planning exercise that concluded last year that projected what the load growth would likely be in Upper Lynn Canal. And so the utility, relies on that in large part.
Did you rely on that?
We have to.
Okay. Well, the comprehensive plan, does say that we should plan for 460 more people in Haines in the next, 10 or 20 years?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so it's interesting for me, and I know, hold on to your other question, Tom, but I'm trying to get a sense of whether or not APT is, what are you reacting to? You said that you don't see the sales. I understand you don't have a contract with somebody that says,
sure,
I want X number of megawatts of power, in 2015 or whatever. I understand that. But what about the looming growth potential? Is this kind of a statement that maybe it's not there, despite what Robert says?
I believe that that's very possible. Uh-huh. If you look at, say, the growth in Haines over the last, say, 5 years, there's been some, increase in population.
Mm-hmm.
I believe everybody agrees that, in lots of construction, some, commercial construction and so forth. But we really haven't seen a big increase in sales, of energy sales.
Because they only are only here in the summertime when the sun is out and you don't need to turn the lights on.
That is part of it.
Yeah, you don't have to turn the furnace on. Everybody closes up. And, I mean, there are the demographics of Haines, no doubt, is changing. And Skagway has already experienced that. And I think that the reality for us is looming. That's the same way that we are going.
Yeah.
So that is a very interesting thing.
We also feel that there's been, some movement to, conservation. We feel that's
sure,
very, very much
And
of
the
it.
Comp plan in Haines, and I'm sure in Skagway, also calls for people to constantly, build more efficient buildings, to conserve energy and, all of that stuff. And
it's a two-edged sword.
Yeah, and there's alternative energy is explored. Also, the Haines-Borough, being a kind of a lead on that. Tom, is your question still valid here?
Well, you were getting me to that, and,
okay,
that is one criticism here that's been leveled by the environmental community is the APT hasn't done enough in terms of promoting conservation, or maybe the borough hasn't done enough that actually conservation generates the more jobs than anything else in your community, because people are selling these special light bulbs. The construction guys are retrofitting houses. They're putting in insulation. One resident, Sue Liebenson, has studied this for the state recently and mm-hmm. said this is where the money is.
Well, it's government money. I mean, I'm not.
Well, not necessarily.
Making a value judgment.
Not necessarily.
On it. Most of it is government programs.
If Stickler comes in and Stickler comes in and redoes your house because you've decided you don't want to pay so much to the electric company,
mm-hmm.
and that's a private decision, the criticism is that the community is saying, geez, look at this demand. But the other part of the equation of demand is how much
mm-hmm.
you and I burn mm-hmm. every day.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess have we done, Danny, do you think we've done meaningful, and Deborah, I guess I'm asking you, mm-hmm. maybe if you put on your assembly hat, you know, have we made meaningful strides in conservation in this community?
Oh, I don't want to answer that. And I know we're certainly trying. I mean, I see us trying to do that. You know, and in preparation for this show, it did occur to me at one point in time that I should go down and find out what this, you know, wood pellet operation installation has done at the senior center. I really don't have an answer or report on that. Mm-hmm. But do you have it? Does anyone here know right now?
Last we checked, it was burning fewer pellets than anticipated, so yep. It was saving money.
Saving a lot of money.
A caller has called in and wants to ask what AP&T is doing to reduce the demand for energy. That's what we were kind of doing that. I don't know that it's AP&T's role to reduce the demand for energy. I think AP&T's role is to respond to the demand for energy, yeah. but legally, go ahead and answer this.
Legally, we were required to meet that demand. Mm-hmm. But I think maybe the question, maybe I shouldn't put words in somebody's mouth, but maybe the question is just exactly what Tom just said. Mm-hmm. You know, what are we doing to create, you know, to have better conservation right. and to provide for that? Right. And I guess personally, one of my thoughts is that, the price that we have is pretty good for conservation. If you compare our prices to other locations, then, you know, they are,
right.
you know, right. we already are promoting that.
Right.
But as far as, you know, to provide, specific programs, you know, that needs to be discussed, you know, at a very broad level mm-hmm, to mm-hmm. come up with some kind of policy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in general, you know, it all comes out of the rates. You know, if it's going to be a program put on by AP&T, then that has to be borne by somebody.
Mm-hmm. Like me and anybody who turns on a light switch, I suppose.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm curious to ask these guys, as uh-huh. planning commissioners, this question of getting back to the wood pellets. There was a discussion of having a wood pellet plant here, making them here. And one of the things that came up was, well, the power here is too expensive.
Manufacturing.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up. I'm sorry. I just want to jump in and say, because one of the things that you look at, the biggest users of energy in Haines are the school and the two grocery stores. The biggest energy user in Skagway is White Pass, the ore terminal. You know, it's about much more industrial use.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a really interesting question. The users in Skagway are industrial. Mm-hmm. We don't have industrial users. We just suck up the energy and don't, you know, create anything out of it.
Mm-hmm. Right, and if we wanted to put a wood pellet plant here, do we need a Connolly Lake? I mean, those questions are kind of, set in the greater context of mm-hmm. the future of our community and what these two guys do on the Planning Commission.
Right, and thank you for bringing us back to that, because, you know, I don't know that, I think it's interesting, Robert's first statement, it's not our job to go out and advocate, but it's our job to, you know, kind of, well, can you rephrase that as planning commissioners too?
Well, we're helping to set the stage. I think one of the things that the public sector does is provide the infrastructure backbone, create policies to get out of the way the private sector doing what they do.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, I think, I don't know, I thought the Planning Commission to a certain extent was supposed to reflect what the community wants in the way of the shape of our community.
Well,
which is why we have the comprehensive plan.
Sure.
But see, that's why I thought it was very interesting. I truly expected to open up the comprehensive plan, even though I, as an assembly member, passed on it, and I was supposed to have read every detail. It did not occur to me at the time. It's just like the power poles at the intersection. I had to see it to really understand. In the comprehensive plan, there is no statement that says, we want to have X megawatts of power so that it would encourage manufacturing or the attraction of industry. It's not. It may be there subtly, though, Robert.
It says point blank, we want to achieve a rate of 15 cents a
yes.
kilowatt hour less because that is what stimulates economic development. Right now, you know, in the region, I describe our region as having three tiers, almost a caste system of electrical users. We've got the haves, which, you know, generally have 10, 12 cents a kilowatt hour. The haves not at the 60-plus rent. And those mired in mediocrity, which you know, here we are, we can survive at 23, but you're not really going to prosper. So in order to do planning projects like the pellet mill, we have to figure out a parallel path for electrical generation as well.
I'm letting you have the very last word on that, Robert, and that's where we're going to close the show because our time is up. Thank you very much, all of you, for being here. I really have been stimulated by the conversation and hope that all of us have been. Thank you very much for being here today.
Thanks.
Thank you.
And it's 5 minutes in front of 11 o'clock. You're listening to Talk Around Town. And hey, who are you?
I'm Jen Walsh.
Jen, I think your name has been mentioned earlier on the show a couple of times. So tell us about yourself.
Well, I'm in the midst of a pretty exciting week.
I'll bet so.
I feel, I don't know, people I don't even know are coming up to say hi and congratulations on the bike race. And I trained really hard, but I really wasn't expecting, I guess, to do how I did.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
No.
How well did you expect to do?
I guess I don't know exactly how well I expected to do, but, you know, there were a lot of women in the race who were doing it solo who've done it in years past.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I didn't expect to finish in front of them.
Right. Well, and I'm sure you didn't expect to finish almost close to an hour faster than the... the person who held the record, the previous record for the women's solo. Anyway, I've heard you described as an extraordinary athlete. Some say you're crazy, okay, but others just say you are incredibly disciplined and wildly focused. What do you think you are?
Crazy.
Really? Did you, no. So we heard earlier about the guy who won the men's solo, you know, training for 2 hours a day from 4 a.m. to 6 a.m. for the last, like, I don't know how many months. Tell me about your regimen.
Well, I went to my Firefighter 1 in Skagway for the month of October, and I pretty much only ran. I came back in November, and then the weather was such that I started riding a bike. So I started in November, and it wasn't that grueling. I didn't get up at 4 a.m.
Right.
I fitted in when it worked in, lunch breaks and mm-hmm. after work. And I guess at the height of the training, I was training maybe about 250 miles a week.
Wow.
So.
Okay. And what else do you do, Jen? I mean, this is about the whole you. It's not just about the bike race.
Okay. Well, last week ended with winning the bike race, but it began with completing my EMT3.
All right.
So I went to Sitka for 2 weeks, mm-hmm. and I just had a blast.
You're wearing the Haines Alaska Fireman's hoodie.
It's true. I can wear it as part of my uniform.
Yeah, you are a part of the Haines EMT.
Yeah. I work with Al 40 hours a week, mm-hmm. and I'd like to, you know, probably say thank you to him because I did ask him to pray for a tailwind.
Really? Wow. Let that get out. Al produces.
No, he's a great guy to work with. Mm-hmm. You know, for mm-hmm. it's a lot of hours mm-hmm. to spend with somebody all week.
So are you mostly like just a person who, I know you have a lot of energy. I see you running around town, but like, do you garden or do you play the fiddle or do you do anything?
I mostly do things outside.
Yeah. Yeah.
Melina taught me how to knit last winter.
Cool. Oh, and there goes your radio. All right. Okay. How long have you been in town?
I guess this is my fifth summer.
Okay. And I think I met your mother. Did she visit a couple years
you
ago?
You did. And yeah. You know what? She'll be here next year for the bike race to ride my
support.
Oh,
terrific. Terrific. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And you have about six, seven years, you said? I'm sorry. It was halfway.
In here in Haines? Yeah. Five.
Mm-hmm.
Five
years,
summers.
Okay.
And I started coming up with Alaska Mountain Guides. So
okay.
That was how I started. I mean, I came up from Utah.
Okay. Terrific. Mm-hmm. That's where you're from?
No, I'm from Wisconsin.
From Wisconsin. Oh, Wisconsin.
Along my town is about, yeah. My town touches Maggie's town.
Okay.
It's tiny.
Very cool. Very cool. There's a lot of Wisconsin people in Haines, Alaska. It seems to be like there's a little track between those two. Jen, anything else you'd like us to know about you?
Not really.
All right. Well, congratulations. And I know that one thing I do want to say, I don't want to take away from your extraordinary experience and your extraordinary feat. But it's also, too, I just want to say hats off to Brandi Stickler also. I mean, she would have won if it weren't for you. Right? to have two women from Haines in the top three is
extraordinary. And I made a new friend. I mean, and we're going to go do the next bike race. It's on July 27th in Canada. So it's 108 miles only.
I just talked to Jim this morning. I said, you watch out. She's going to start traveling around.
I told her dad today.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
We'll see you. Bye-bye. And that's it for Talk Around Town this week. Thanks to our guests, Tom Morfitt, Jeannie Kitayama, Heather Whitney, Robert Venables, Danny Gontz, and Jen Walsh. The next edition of Talk Around Town will be July 18th. Please stay tuned. This is station KHNS 102.3 FM, Haines, Alaska. The time is 11 o'clock.